The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Yeah, I think it's appropriate to bring heavy fuel in once again as the bumper to go into this segment here, because Southern Oregon PBS has a really interesting series coming up. It's going to be starting a week from today, and it has to do with exploring energy's, well, Oregon's energy future, and it's entitled Energy Horizons. And joining me in studio, we have Brad Fay, and Keegan Van Hook, and we'll get them introduced here in just a moment. Brad, you're the director of content, and director of content, I like that. That's a very official kind of term, but what are you doing?
It's basically programming.
Programming. But see, director of content uses more words. So.
Yeah, well, I also am the executive producer of several things, including this series, Energy Horizons. So it spans executive producing, programming. I also am over the pledge department, all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah. How are the pledges going these days?
Huh? Okay. They could be better. But nowadays, when most people, in fact, it's interesting, streaming has now surpassed broadcast.
Really?
Yeah. At least in the public television world. The lines crossed. And so if people are getting most of their public broadcasting, their public media from streaming, it's hard to go on the air and get as many pledges during a broadcast.
But yet what you do is that the pledges end up being used, I would imagine, then to keep transmitters going and translators going around from town to town so people in the far reaches can watch you.
Absolutely. Right? And that's our mission, is to try to get to people who don't have internet, for example. And there's several people like that in our six county viewing area. So, yeah, but the pledges are going well, and it continues to keep the infrastructure in place, and we're going strong.
All right, appreciate that. Well, why don't you introduce Keegan? Tell us a little bit about Keegan here.
I will. First, I'm going to say we talked several months back about a show we aired called Other Side of the Hill.
Yes.
And what that was talking about all the energy opportunities on the other side of the Cascades in eastern Oregon, how lucrative it's become for some farmers, how there's a lot of innovation and so forth. So we decided to do this side of the hill. And of course, we looked at it in terms of doing another hour show, just like Other Side of the Hill. But when, and Keegan will tell you about this in a minute, once we started to unpeel the onion, we came up with six full one-hour episodes on what's happening not only in our viewing area, our six-county viewing area, but throughout the whole state, because it's really, really quite amazing. So I'll turn it over here to Keegan, because he's the one that directed and shot the show and came up with all of this material, many, many interviews, over 40 interviews. So Keegan Van Hook is our producer, mm-hmm. Director, and all-around good guy at SOPPS.
We appreciate that. Keegan, welcome to the show. Keegan Van Hook, director and reporter, right?
Yeah.
So now, you had so much. You thought you were doing 1 hour, and then you end up having 6 hours. You probably could have had 10 hours worth of material or even more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing what goes on. So you started going down this road here, and it's a week from today that this is going to start. It's Energy Horizons, Exploring Oregon's Energy Future. How did you approach this? Tell us what was your take on this first, because it always matters what angle a story is told from, and everybody has a point of view. Where are you going?
Yeah, Bill, I mean, this really, like Brad indicated, it started as a very kind of a kernel of an idea and then has quickly become completely its own beast. There really was never like a single point of inspiration. Mm-hmm. We kind of went into the energy subject with very fresh eyes, not knowing a lot about what was going on, and kind of innocently exploring our way through it and then learning the shocking truth of how important the energy system is to all of our lives. The prosperity that we have around us, the ability for us to do this radio show right now, is all brought to us by the fact that we have a consistent 24/7 supply of energy coming to us at all times. But that energy system has a lot of problems today, and it's going to face more problems as we move into the future. So if we want this level of prosperity to continue and to be sustainable, steadily transitioning our energy system to new forms of energy, diversifying our mix is mm-hmm. a phrase that they use, is going to be a really important agenda as we move forward. So the approach was really to just find out all these different perspectives about what's going on. You know, you have people who want to transition the energy system because of climate and the problems that we see there. But then there's also the resource depletion issue. There's a concept of EROI, energy return on investment. When you chase after any energy resource, you have to use energy to get energy. And right now, we're running up against steadily declining EROI in all of our different energy sources.
And that has to do with, as an example, let's go with oil,
yeah,
for example.
That's the chief example.
Chief example in which, early on, you're able to stick a pipe down 10 feet. There's the oil in Titusville, Pennsylvania. Boom, off you go to the races, and then you pump and pump and pump. And then you have to keep going deeper and then deeper. You have to go out and explore on different fields. Mm-hmm. You have to explore different technology, fracking as an example, going deep, angle drilling. I mean, it's just all sorts of things. You're right. And do you go into that part of this as
yeah,
part of the
big time? Yeah, fracking really kind of saved us in a way. Like, everything we have right now, basically our entire economy is built on an oil infrastructure. Name a thing that exists in the world today and you can find how it traces back somehow to the giant amount of oil that we're able to use
especially
to build
food.
All this stuff.
Especially food, by the way.
Everything. I mean, one of the big examples is, in medieval times, it took a person to basically subsist off themselves. And if you were in extremely bountiful times, that one person might be able to create enough food for themselves and one other person. You have a 2-to-1 EROI. Today, we have something like a 10-to-1 EROI thanks to oil. A single person can sit in a harvester and create enough grain, for example, to feed 10,000 people. That's a massive ratio and is fundamentally what allows the civilization we have today to exist.
And without it, we got serious problems.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
So when we look at the decreasing EROI of oil, we are really looking at a bad situation for our future unless we can figure out how to diversify the mix. So something I want to make very clear is that this isn't about getting rid of oil at all. We're going to be using it for quite a long time to come. There's really no escape.
I appreciate hearing that truth because I know I'll hear people talking in city council meetings who are thinking, all we have to do is just get off of it. It's a little more complex than that.
It's about highest and best use. Yeah. There are many things that can be done extremely well with renewable energy, for example. Solar panels right now are going up everywhere. In many ways, at this point, solar is the cheapest form of energy that you can deploy in terms of a new utility scale plant. That's why we see so much solar going up everywhere right now. You send up a drone over these neighborhoods and about half the rooftops these days have solar panels because it does great things for your electricity bill. Now, subsidization is a massive part of why that has been a giant success.
In fact, that's why. Without the subsidies, I don't think you'd see them, though.
Pretty much not. But subsidization is basically what drives our entire energy system, oil or not. Gas is subsidized as well. So we have to figure this out, and we have to figure out a way to truly diversify the mix, figure out what the best energy resources for each use are, and then make ourselves as efficient as possible in that regard.
Who are some of the people you ended up talking to as part of this 6-part series, which starts next Thursday?
Yeah, well, like Brad mentioned, we talked to over 40 people for the series, and not all of them agree with each other, which I think is a really key part of what makes perhaps our series a little different from other energy series that have been put together before. But some of the names that come to mind right away are Alan Zelenka from the Oregon Department of Energy, who has a super long history of dealing with exactly this question. How do you make renewable energy work on a grid that has been essentially set up for fossil fuels? We also talked to Dr. Charles Hall, we've been talking about EROI. Dr. Charles Hall is the person who first conceptualized EROI back in the 1960s while studying fish migration. And then later, through work that he did with some of his graduate students, figured out how the biological concept of EROI actually still applies to our human economies, because human economies fundamentally are just another animal ecosystem, just the most complex form, because we as humans are in many ways the most complex form of animal life that exists on the planet today. We also talked to Dr. Bryson Robertson of the Pacific Marine Energy Center, working on some very cutting edge and more far future ideas for wave energy technology. We talked with Ballard Fuel Cell Systems in Bend, who are looking at hydrogen fuel cells. We talked with Jason Bush from the Pacific Ocean Energy Trust, who's looking at offshore wind. He's a strong proponent of offshore wind. We also talked with members of the Trawler Cooperative, Midwater Trawler Cooperative, Heather Mann over there, who is a stakeholder in this issue and who isn't in favor of offshore wind because of the myriad of issues are possible.
Like I said, you have people that are loggerheads on this.
Yes,
right, on
big
both
time.
Sides, which is quite interesting. And, of course, we know that the BOEM ended up, that auction ended up going down in flames recently.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I'm kind of curious. Here is, I've been somewhat skeptical of the renewable energy push. Not that I am against renewable energy. I'm not. What I am is this. What I am skeptical about is the ability to deploy this in a grid scale, reliable, non chaotic kind of system. Every other system that has tried to go with full renewable or is close, the more you get renewable, the more chaotic and the more brownouts and the more intermittent things become, because our society is built on energy when we need it, not when Mother Nature provides it. So is this something which ends up being talked about at any point?
I'll just address that first, and Keegan can expound on it. But you're right, especially when it comes to wind and solar.
Right.
But that's one of the reasons, and we go into it a lot, for offshore wind. Mm-hmm. The area in southwestern Oregon is known as the Saudi Arabia of wind because it's constant, it's 24/7, and the turbines that they're going to put in there, for example, assuming this moves forward, would be 24/7. Another one is geothermal. We look at that too. Well, the geothermal is 24/7. So I understand where you're coming from in terms of solar and some of these on-again, off-again sources. But as Keegan, you go ahead and expound on it if you'd like. We have discovered that there's other ways to deal with that issue.
All right. And what were some of those? Like I said, we got 6 hours to be watching this, but maybe give me a thumbnail sketch on some of the ideas that you've heard. And I'm hoping that they're not trying to place everything on mining the entire world for batteries, for grid storage, because that's expensive and it's environmentally degrading.
Like what Brad mentioned, you know, the wind off the coast and the geothermal, those are two good examples of, a near 24/7 source of renewable energy. Mm-hmm. But both of those, you know, like you just saw with the BOEM auction getting at least postponed, if not canceled for good, it's going to take a long time to get to those sources. So in terms of renewable energy right now, wind and solar seem like the more short-term options, but both of those are highly intermittent when it comes to the on-land generation. You know, solar only works in the day and it works best when it's sunny. There's places in the state where you can
get... And hey, we're the Northwest.
Right.
You know, the farther up north you get, the more of a problem this is, especially in wintertime. Mm-hmm.
Eastern Oregon has good potential for solar because it's lots of sun. You know, Klamath Falls, for example, has 300 days of sun, so you're seeing lots of solar development there. But the intermittency thing is a giant issue. And so storage, if we wanted to do a fully renewable grid, is going to be really important. But batteries, like you mentioned, take extremely unsustainable resources. You know, lithium batteries, for example, are a great technology. They're powering all of our phones. I'm sure you have devices here in the studio that use lithium batteries. But that's a rare earth element. And so there isn't a lot of it here on the planet for us to use. So unless we want to go to space mining, which is a more far-fetched option, we're going to have to find other alternatives for energy storage. So we explore some of those in this series.
Good.
For example, we have sodium ion batteries, which are a much more promising grid storage option because sodium is, of course, extremely common here on Earth.
Yes.
And those batteries actually can be developed to have a much longer life than lithium batteries.
Well, if so, that's really cool because lithium ion is not particularly 10 years. You're good. You're happy if you get 10 years out of something. You get 10 years out of a laptop battery, you're lucky.
I also want to mention hydro pump storage, which is one of the oldest forms of energy storage that humanity has. We've been pumping water uphill and then using it as a, you know, releasing that water downhill for a long time as a way to bring energy back out. And so right now, for example, in Klamath Falls as well, at the Swan Lake site, they're developing the Swan Lake Energy Project, which is one of the newest energy storage projects being developed, where they're going to do exactly this. When there's excess energy from renewables, they're going to use that excess to pump water uphill. And then when there's a shortfall of energy from renewables, they're then going to release the water and basically run like a hydro system in order to bring stuff back onto the grid. That isn't a complete solution, and it has problems of its own, which we explore in this series.
And once again, also expensive, and plus you also have the energy losses of pumping it. There's always a loss every time you're transferring it. And you know that. We don't want to get off into the weeds, but I'm glad that you're looking at all of these different, hey, here are the positives, here are some of the drawbacks too. In fact, you're taking a fair look at it. I consider that really good because this has become a very politicized sector, and it's been the science, so to speak, it has been based on where's the subsidy going? That's where the science is going to support it. You know, that that kind of thing. Just my opinion about this. By the way, I'm speaking with Brad Fay, Director of Content, Keegan Van Hook, who's director and reporter, regarding Energy Horizons. It's exploring Oregon's energy future. It's going to be debuting next Thursday on Southern Oregon PBS. And I imagine you're going to be running this several times, right? You're not just going to like run each episode one time.
Yeah,
right?
We've already scheduled repeats for January.
Good.
But again, this is a 6-part series. It does premiere next Thursday at 8 o'clock. But then the following 5 Thursdays are the next 5 episodes.
Okay, very good. I have to, now I'm going to bring up something which would be very politicized, highly charged. Is there any conversation about nuclear energy? Because I'm concerned that if people are not willing to seriously look at some ability to be able to take something out of the earth that's small, low mining, low impact, and can be done much more safely. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, yes, we were playing Three Mile Island and, you know, that whole ABC story, that movie of the week that they did, whatever, I forget what it was called, but I remember the horror stories. China, what is it, China Syndrome?
China Syndrome.
Yeah, that's what that was. Gosh, that's going back a long time. But, you know, at some point, we see the European Union working a lot of nuclear, but in Oregon, we've said no. You know, the voters have said no to something like this. And is that brought up at all?
We do discuss nuclear energy very briefly in our first episode because there's only one nuclear power plant operating today in the Pacific Northwest. It isn't even here in Oregon. It's north of Richland. It's the Columbia Generating Station, I believe it's what it's called.
Right.
And that's been there for a long time. But really, it is something that isn't really in the discussion when it comes to Oregon. Nuclear energy, it barely comes up in our series because our series is really structured as using Oregon as a microcosm to look at energy development and when
so
we don't have any.
In other words, it's what is politically possible in Oregon right
essentially,
now, I guess is
yes.
what you're going.
Yeah,
at.
And
okay.
No one even brought it up. Alan Zelenka was the only one who even brought it up when I asked him, what is our current energy mix today? And he told me, oh, well, it's a 40-something percent hydro, and then from there it goes down to the rest of it is coal and natural gas and then a tiny bit of wind and a tiny bit of nuclear and a tiny bit of solar. And so we brought up the nuclear there and mentioned that power plant in Richland, but that's about it,
yeah.
Really.
In the 6-part series, are you talking much about hydropower? The reason I bring this up is that, you know, we have been cushioned from the intermittencies of the renewable energy revolution a lot because we still have a huge baseload of the Bonneville project up in, on the northern part of the state. And yet the environmental political movement wants that all gone too. They want the Snake River dams gone, and everything's about removal of dam and infrastructure. Does that get approached at all?
We do talk about it. I mean, the Klamath River dams were just removed, of course. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really come up in our series, but we talk about the extreme importance to Oregon's energy history of hydropower, that hydropower is really what has made Oregon into the state that it is today. The fact that still most of our power, it's the single largest source of power that we have in terms of a singular source. It's not most of our power, but it's the largest single source of power we have in our system. Right now, a ton of the energy that we're using to do this radio show is actually being brought to us through some of the longest distance transmission lines on the continent from those Columbia River dams. So it's extremely important. And a giant part of Oregon's history, they do come with their own problems. You know, the salmon spawning is interrupted by dams. And I think essentially in the dams world, the entire conversation is about how to make it possible for salmon to get around. And they put a ton of effort into making that happen.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they are because, you know, that's the practical way. I don't know if people realize what a gift that has been, you know, for our area. And also the fact that the other part that is not talked too much about is coal-fired power. I know we've closed down our coal-fired power, but one of the things keeping the lights on here in Southern Oregon, whether they know it or not, all you had to do was go on the EIA.gov website, and you used to be able to see the energy source mix on our grid. And in the wintertime, as soon as the sun went down, boom, here comes the coal power from Wyoming in the interchange, you know, coming in here.
Yep.
And they're going to, they, as in the state, is going to say, hey, we're not going to be allowed to buy this stuff anymore. That was a huge amount of energy that was keeping Southern Oregon alive. And what's going to replace it? Do we kind of get into that?
We do. We talk about the fact that energy is basically piped into Oregon from places like Wyoming, where they still burn coal. Right now, Oregon has, they call them climate goals, but they're really energy goals. It's about bringing our energy system to more sustainable resources. Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways, the reason it may be possible to do, at least here in Oregon, is because we do have so much hydropower on our system. The fact that we have that boost, essentially, that gets us to near half of our energy means that we have that one constant source. They call it baseload power or dispatchable energy, when you just have a constant churning source.
Yeah, the stuff that you're able to say, mm-hmm. hey, we need the energy, give it to us now.
Yeah, and coal is one of the best ways to do that. And so that's where things like energy storage come in. That's why you need it, in order to replace the dispatchability. The solar is not going to be on demand, but you can generate a ton of power with solar during certain times of the day or certain times of the year. It's just never when you want it, essentially. It's like you can generate a city's worth of energy from a solar plant or several solar plants, but it's just not at the right time. So you got to move that energy into a form where it can be stored. You mentioned the losses. That's why we're going to need a ton of energy storage. Most of it probably can't come from lithium batteries, because we have all the issues there. So that's where the sodium and the pump storage really comes in. We're going to have to explore other things too. Energy is one of those extremely unintuitive things, because we think of it as electricity predominantly, but it exists in so many forms. And so this is where the ingenuity of humanity really comes into play.
Well, electricity is only the energy form that we are dispatching and able to distribute it with. It actually comes from many different sources here. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, one more question I had, is there any conversation within this six-part series about solar energy as in a thermal plant? And when I was a young DJ, 1980, went to Solar One. They had the Solar One in Barstow, outside of Daggett. Actually, it was Daggett. And that was when they had the hundreds of mirrors focusing onto the collector. And then you had the coolant or the liquid inside that was heated, superheated. And then you ended up using it to power generators. And it mm-hmm. seemed to work pretty well. I think it's been decommissioned for a number of years now. But the one aspect of that particular type of power plant that was solar is that, unlike solar cells, you're able to fill a tank with the hot liquid, and that at nighttime you would still continue to keep the plant going. So, yeah, you'd heat it up big time in the daytime, and then you'd be able to keep the generator running at night, so it's a 24/7 deal. Is there any of that going on around here yet?
It wasn't really discussed. It didn't come up. I'm aware of that technology. You know, mm-hmm. it's a super exciting thing. I think they call it a molten salt reactor. It's super cool. You know, you see these giant arrays. They build them like in Saudi Arabia right now.
Now you don't want to be the bird flying through the beam as it's going by. But yeah, you're barbecued. But that's another. Yeah. But they all have downs. They all have their downsides.
There's no such thing as an impact-free energy source. It doesn't exist. Everything is trade-offs when it comes to energy. Anything you want to build, you have to acknowledge what those impacts are going to be, whether it's to our lives or to the environment. And you have to decide, is it worth it in that location to get that energy, or isn't it? That's a huge part of the offshore wind discussion right now, because, as Brad mentioned, it's an extremely promising source of energy, but it comes with all these questions that we don't have answers to right now. We don't know how it's going to impact the upwelling zone that we have off the coast. Extremely rare ecosystem.
I got to ask you, Brad, are they talking about the bird chop-ups? You know, is that something that gets addressed in this?
I don't think it does it?
No, we do talk about it.
Oh, okay. We did?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
No, that's been a thing. That's actually a great example of how we as humans have learned how our energy systems have impact, because back when they were first doing wind turbines here on land, they were extremely gung-ho about it, and they wanted to put them in all these places where we looked at the wind maps and like, wow, great wind resources right there. And they're building them on the tops of ridges and all these locations, only to then find out that those are migratory pathways for certain bird species. And then blah, 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 you're getting all these birds chopped up. And so we've learned, okay, there's certain places where birds pass through in high quantities, and then there's others where they actually don't go through very much at all. So we're learning more about where we can build wind. And sometimes it's not always where the very best wind resources are. So that's where you come to trade-offs, where sometimes you might be extremely tempted to build something in a spot because it looks really promising on a certain chart, but then you look at a different chart from a different field. You know, one thing is meteorology and the other thing is biology, and they conflict, and they're not going to be a good match for each other anymore. And so that's a really big part of the offshore wind debate, is that we don't know all the things mm-hmm. when it comes to how our the pelagic upwelling ecosystem is going to be affected. We don't know how that's going to impact the fishing community, fishing industry. It's a giant question mark. And so that's where you get all these concerns. I think they're very legitimate and need to be figured out. Yeah, that's a big part of what our offshore wind episode explores.
That's what I'm hoping to find out more about, because one thing I'm hoping that we don't have to experience is what they have on the East Coast, in which we don't need dead whale equity, you know, off of the Oregon shore when we're, you know, exploring everything for wind and or wave energy. And then you end up, you know, screwing up with their migratory aspect. You know, it's difficult to then talk about, hey, we're doing this for environmental reasons, and then, you know, destroying the environmental village in different ways.
Something that really informs a lot of the reporting I do is that there's content and then there's process. And when you ask people about renewable energy in this very general sense, usually they're in favor of it. You said before that you're not against renewable energy.
No.
You know, it's a fascinating concept. It's a lot of these technologies are very cool. In some cases, they're actually very beautiful to look at. But then there's process, and the process for getting it done is usually where things tend to break down. We like the idea in general, but we get to the specifics in discussing how are we going to do this? Where are we going to do this? What are we going to put in? And that's where all the conflict arises, and that's where the hard work actually begins. The idea, fine, great, let's do it. But then it's the figuring it out that's the real challenge. And so that's a lot of what our series explores. I don't want to say that our series will give you the answers or tell anyone what the right answer to our energy system is. But I want it to be a conversation starter so that we can have a realistic conversation about renewable energy and get to what I'm sort of referring to as realistic optimism for our future.
Yeah, and realistic also means that it has to be affordable too, because if people can't afford, you know, to keep their heat on, that's not going to work either.
Yeah, quality of life is super important. You know, a lot of people talk about degrowth, and degrowth is one of those things where it sounds good on paper to some people, but then to others it really doesn't. And so that approach is very controversial.
Degrowthing is fine unless you're the person being degrowthed.
And then, no one wants to be degrowthed.
Well, you know, I think those people should be degrowthed. We don't want to go down that road, okay? So once again, Keegan Van Hook, director and reporter regarding, and this is Energy Horizons. It's starting next Thursday, October 17th, 8 o'clock, Southern Oregon PBS. Energy Horizons, Exploring Oregon's Energy Future. Keegan Van Hook is the director and reporter of that. Thank you very much, Keegan. Brad Fay, director of content. Great talking to you both.
And great being here.
Looks like this is going to be something to watch for sure. And I'm going to, I know 8 o'clock is usually late for me because I'm on the toddler schedule, but I'll certainly DVR it if nothing else, okay?
Good.
Yeah, you can watch it online on PBS Passport, and I believe we're going to be putting it on our YouTube channel as well. So it'll be available in multiple locations to watch on demand.
Very good. Good talk. Thanks again.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
839, and you're on KMED 99.3 KBXG.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine checkup, oil change, brake repair, or full-on engine overhaul, trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Wrencher Garage, across from Elmer's on Biddle.
First, we place our sow's ear into the device. Shut the door, press the button, and voila! A beautiful silk purse.
Wow. Usually, people who make big claims can't deliver.
Hey, this is just a hot sow's ear!
But not at Lithia Body and Paint. Since 1946, we've been providing collision repairs so good, it's like it never happened. Service, speed, accuracy. That's Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10.
Artisan Bakery Cafe invites you to swing by for their mouth-watering fall treats. Apple strudel, a flaky delight that's pure comfort on a plate. Pumpkin streusel muffins, the perfect blend of spice and sweetness. And delicious pumpkin loaf, rich and moist with a hint of cinnamon. But wait, there's more. Apple blossoms, an apple pie cup with an apple crisp topping. Swing by Tuesday through Friday from 7 to 3 and Saturday from 8 to 3. Artisan Bakery Cafe, 1325 Center Drive across from South Fred Meyer. Also, order on DoorDash.
Welcome to Dustin Curbs Parking Lot Maintenance, where exceptional parking lot maintenance services are provided to Southern Oregon. From lot sweeping to construction cleanup, pressure washing to snow plowing and de-icing, Dustin Curbs ensures properties remain in top condition year-round. Recognized as the gold medalist of Southern Oregon in 2023, Dustin Curbs is trusted to deliver top quality service. Visit DustinCurb.com to make an appointment and keep your parking lot safe, clean, and inviting. That's DustinCurb.com.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Pretty meaty conversation there with the folks from Southern Oregon PBS on Oregon Energy Horizons and more. Bob, you had a question you would have wanted to ask. I'm sorry, I didn't really have time to take calls on it. It went long enough as is, but what were you thinking about for a future question?
Somebody out there could answer it. I remember reading a study where they wanted to take the surplus electricity and inject pressurized air into the ground as storage and then release that, you know, through air turbine, kind of like an air ratchet type of thing, only on a larger scale, and then reproduce the energy out of that. And I don't know if that ever made any headway, because one of the key points was our soils in Oregon with the basalt and all that could contain that compressed air.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I'll see if I can send that along to Keegan. I don't know if they got to that or not. That reminds me of when I was a kid living in Western Pennsylvania. They had what was called, there was a pumping station that we used to go by on the natural gas world. It was called Dice Storage, I think is what it was. And what they would do is they ended up pumping natural gas under pressure into the rocks, and they kept it there as kind of like an extra big tank, really.
Right. Yeah, and you didn't have to build a steel tank and keep it on the surface. So.
Yeah, and so they would pump it underground and then bring the gas up whenever they needed it, I guess.
Yeah. So if they could do gas, they could probably do air as well and then run that through, you know, an air turbine. There was a guy here in town, gosh, it's probably been 25-30 years ago, he mounted an air tank on his bicycle and took an old ratchet from a ratchet wrench and hooked it up, but he could only get down to maybe to the next gas station where he could fill up his air. But nowadays, it would cost you 50 cents to a dollar. I don't think that would be very efficient.
All right. Hey, appreciate the call there, Bob. Good take on it. 770-5633. If you're on hold, I will get to you right after news. I ran a little bit long with the Southern Oregon PBS folks. But we'll wrap up Conspiracy Theory Thursday with your calls, too.
One of each K4 VIN 014548 MSRP 24145 Telluride VIN 563162 MSRP 42930 5872 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title license, 150 registration processing fee, trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt, negative equity applied to new loan balance, ends 103124.
It's time to trade in and take off in a new Kia at Kia Medford. Trade in your old vehicle for cash, then shop our huge selection of brand new Kias. Take off in the all new 2025 Kia K4 LXS, just $169 a month lease, or a new 2024 Kia Telluride S all-wheel drive, only $239 a month lease. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds. With no effect on your credit score, then join us in the fight against breast cancer with $100 of every sale going to Access, a charity right here in Medford. Trade in and take off at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
News is sponsored by Valley View Nursery, your only nursery with online pricing. Visit ValleyViewNursery.com. They're closer than you think.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Wednesday was the first day of testimony in the Negasi Zuberi trial in Medford. He's accused of kidnapping a Seattle prostitute and holding her in a makeshift cell in his garage. The alleged victim testified Wednesday, describing multiple rapes while shackled on the car trip from Seattle to Klamath Falls and her eventual escape from the cell. She was found by a Depot Bay tourist while running down the street looking for help. A powerful X-class solar flare could make it possible to see the northern lights over Oregon tonight. A rating of 7 on the KP index is needed for Oregon to see the aurora borealis, and current predictions are for a KP 8. The latest batch of voters registered incorrectly through the state's motor voter program may have been discovered too late to stop them from receiving ballots for the upcoming election. The Oregon Association of County Clerks says those 302 ballots have been inactivated and will not be counted. They say the clerks will follow state and federal laws to count every eligible ballot. Bill London, KMED.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
The purchase of another gutter manufacturing machine has spurred speculation at the offices of Fontana Roofing.
Yes, we'll custom fabricate them on site in your choice of 30 colors and includes heavy duty hangers, zinc plated screws, and complete downspouts. Great, talk to you soon.
Another quote?
Yep, they're deciding between copper, steel, or aluminum. All will last decades. Even when they're occasionally plugged, they can handle the weight of water and leaves.
And space dust. Researchers have calculated about 5,200 metric tons of micrometeorites fall to Earth every year.
Huh. Ooh, what about bird poo? I'm guessing that's got to be in the millions of tons dropping from the sky every day into the gutters.
Fontana Roofing manufactures sturdy, custom gutter systems to withstand just about whatever lands on your roof. Call Fontana Roofing for your next set of gutters. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Joel here from Butler Ford and Truck Center, and I got a couple unbeatable Joel specials on Ford trucks this month. Number one special is an all-new F-150 4x4 for only $377 a month. It's a 36-month lease, which means you get to drive it for 3 years, come back, and trade it in on a new one for only $377 a month for a Ford F-150 4x4. Hey, pay a little more per month, and you can supersize your Ford truck to an F-350 four-wheel drive diesel. That's only $555 a month for a 36-month lease, and that's my second truck special this month. When you think Ford, I want you to think Butler Ford. Come down and see me in Ashland, because no one knows how to make a better deal on new Ford F-150 Super Duty or SUV than me. That's probably why Butler Ford is the highest Google-rated Ford dealership in Oregon. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes down the freeway in Ashland, right off of exit 19, where we got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned, and super low payment.
36-month leases with $7,500 cash or trade to a signing, excluding tax, license, title, 250 dealer dock fee on stock numbers 59835 and selling price of 5172 and stock number 59809 and selling price of 69710. After all rebates and discounts on approved credit through Ford Credit Finance, see dealer for details.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Gold taking just a very slight pullback this morning to 2622. But boy, there doesn't seem to be going back down to 1800 anytime soon. And if you're looking for gold, silver, and you wish to get some financial insurance, because as I was talking about with Lynn, even an hour and a half back or something like that, there is no conversation on how to deal with the debt in or dealing with the budget. $1.8 trillion. And gold and silver is about protecting you against when, well, government gets out of control. And there you go. Talk to Jay Austin and Company, Gold and Silver Buyers in Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. Call 482-3715. Get your appointment. These are the recognized experts, the trusted people that I've been dealing with for a long time, one of my oldest sponsors. So when you're looking to, this is not about not having food or water or things tucked away. This is about a portion for long-term wealth protection in the event of hinky. Not that there could be anything hinky, you know, going on in this world right now. Jay Austin, Ashland and Grants Pass, fortunereserve.com, okay? All right, Miner Dave, we got to work quick here. We're almost off the air this morning. So today's the anniversary of when you ended up being thrown in jail, right?
Right. 12 years ago, you conducted interviews with me before my trial.
Mm-hmm.
The trial was in 2013, and I went to jail in the end of October. And I spent...
And this was about you living on your mining claim, and they went after you for that, right?
Right. And I wanted to thank you because we did those interviews, and Kirby Jackson saved him. They're on his YouTube channel. But, you know, the X thing, Flair, that's coming in, this is a real conspiracy theory. It's going to knock Oregon's grid off, and it's going to melt everything down, and you're going to have... probably 2 or 3 years before it all gets built back.
Okay, well, duly noted. I will see you as we're scratching for bugs and mud cookies then, okay, in the Klamath. All we'll right. See you later. All right. Yikes. Let me go to Scott. Scott's in Grants Pass. Hello, Scott. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Hey, you were talking about the testing you did on the water there. Was it Shasta River, I think?
Yeah, actually, Klamath River over by Happy Camp in the center channel. Yes.
Okay. Now, was that aluminum attached to other metals, or was it by itself?
Let me see if I can pull up that. I do have the Happy Camp deal here. Come on, stupid computer, be more fast. There it is. I have the Grants Pass Water Lab report here. Let's see. It just says aluminum, 75 milligrams per liter. It doesn't specify whether it is dissolved in it or if it is part of the solids that were there, too. Because you have to remember that aluminum is like one of the top three most common elements in our earth everywhere. All right, everywhere you go.
Right. Now, my understanding is, though, it's natural when it's attached to other minerals. If it's man-made, it will be free-flowing by itself. And that's what creates the danger if you're drinking it. My concern would be is if the fish are eating it and we're eating the fish, what is that going to do to us? Those are questions that I don't have answers for. But it would,
I would imagine, though, that common sense would say that ultimately – anything that the fish are ingesting or breathing through at this point will concentrate in their flesh to a certain extent. That's why I was half joking that saying that the magic fish coming back to the Klamath, they claim one has returned that they saw on via sonar, that he is pre-wrapped in aluminum foil. Running around him. But I would imagine there is some. You know what I'll do? I will reach out to Grants Pass Water Lab and ask them what the testing protocol was that they used on this and whether it is aluminum in the water, dissolved aluminum, or if it is, just part of the rocks and sediment that might be in it. Okay? All right?
Now, one more thing on that, if I may.
Sure.
I called up a few years ago. I called up Grants Pass Water folks and asked them what they add to the water. And guess what they told me? They add aluminum to it.
Yeah, I think they add an aluminum compound. It is about precipitating out impurities. It's actually quite commonly used in water filtration systems. I know.
Right. So a number of years ago, I watched a video online where they were showing a kind of a documentary where they were showing a town someplace in this country that a truck with aluminum in it, not metal, but liquefied or whatever. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it spilled. And the aluminum got into the water, and after about 10 or 15 years, people started noticing their memories and mental capacities diminishing. And so they've actually proved that. And then there's two guys in Europe, some doctor researchers over there, that showed that their statement was, if there's no aluminum in the brain, there's no dementia.
Yeah, I've read those kind of stories too. More and more, they are connecting the rising aluminum, whether it's aluminum cookware, aluminum glassware. I remember we used to have aluminum glasses, back in the 1960s and 70s.
Yes, I had those as a kid.
Yeah. And they're saying just not a good thing. Appreciate the call. Thanks. I'll try to find out, though, how they measured that, okay? Thank you, Scott. Let me go to Steve. Steve, got a quick one for me? I went a little long with...
Okay, real quick, Bill. Kim Komando mentioned ham radio, we're having a meet and greet sort of Saturday at 9 o'clock at the Star Auto Body classroom on Summit Avenue. And we're just going to talk about how people can get a ham radio license today. We might offer a class. What we've been doing is a 13-week class, and it seems to be too much for a lot of people. So we're looking for people who are interested, and we're willing to discuss other options.
And when is the date of that again? When's it happening and what time?
It's this Saturday.
Saturday. Saturday by Star Body Works over on Summit Avenue. Yeah. You got a little meeting room there that they kindly give you. So 10 o'clock in the morning, right?
Okay, one other real quick thing. The Orville Dam that had the problems with the overflow has built into it pump storage that no longer can be used because they took out the nuke plants. But they had grid voltage run electric motors and huge pumps that would pump water back up into Orville Dam when they had excess electricity from the nuclear plants, but they no longer have anybody that knows how to run it. All the stuff is there, but it can't be used.
I didn't know that. Well, it's another example of that institutional memory that is gone. No?
Yes. Yeah, we had a guy in one of our classes that worked as the California grid, and he told me about that. He said, it's all there, but it's such a complex system. You have to pump air into the pumps to get the resistance off to get the pumps turning at speed so that they can then put water back. It's a complicated system.
Yeah, you're going to make me want to look this up now, Steve. Appreciate the call. I'm almost out of time. I want to make sure and squeeze in line two here. Hello, line two. Welcome on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Quick one. Let's hear it.
Hey, Bill. This is Phil.
Hi, Phil.
I listened to your segment on alternative energy with a lot of interest because years ago we bought a house without a heating system, just a pellet stove, a big old two-story Frank Clark, and I had geothermal installed.
How did that work? How did that work for you?
Oh, it worked perfect. It was expensive to have it installed because it required trenching and to lay the field for the piping and everything. And we had no ductwork. There was no forced air in the house, so that all had to be installed.
Well, I'll let you know, though, that in this Oregon Energy Horizons, pardon me, they do have a big deal on what's going on with geothermal. I have a feeling you'll find that very interesting, and they'll be, I don't know if that's going to be next Thursday's one, but certainly coming up, all right? Thank you, Phil.
We're thrilled to announce we're back with our Veterans Metal Roof Giveaway. After the joy of giving away our first roof, we're honoring veterans with a free custom metal roof. One deserving veteran will win this amazing gift absolutely.